From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
Well, to tell you the truth, I think the 35mm helped us with the work with the children, because I could literally talk to Brooklyn, Christopher, and Valeria and say, guys, you hear that sound? You hear that sound? That's money. So you guys better, you know, come on, focus, focus.
Director Sean Baker, who made his last movie using iPhones, went with old-fashioned film for his new movie, The Florida Project. That turned out to be a useful tool as he taught his trio of 5- and 6-year-old actors about keeping the movie on track and on budget. Baker tells us about directing children in a movie that is not for kids and working with a cast made up almost entirely of first-time actors with just one recognizable star. But first on the news banter, Hollywood reels as the Harvey Weinstein saga continues to dominate the news. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my co-banterer, Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So, wow, you and I have both been in the Harvey Weinstein news tilt-a-whirl, and it keeps going. The latest developments are you had a remarkable interview with Harvey's brother, Bob, over the weekend in which he reviled his brother. We'll talk about that in a sec. One of my sources came forward, Issa Hackett and Roy Price. She told her story, allegations involving the head of Amazon, Roy Price. He was suspended within a very short period after we posted that story last week. And the Academy, over the weekend, booted Harvey Weinstein out because of his behavior. And now the Academy has to contend. Many people are raising the question, what about people like Roman Polanski? So let's start with your Bob interview. You spoke to him on the phone. He was very emotional.
Yeah, this has a Shakespearean element to it now. Harvey's brother Bob just put the knife in his back this weekend, saying he's a predator, saying he's sick, saying he's unremorseful. He knew about this behavior, didn't know about these sexual assaults, but knew about Harvey's philandering for years. They haven't spoken very much in the past 5 years. He moved to LA. He was considering dumping Harvey years ago. He himself was a victim of physical abuse at Harvey's hand, he says. Taking this, what was a disgusting and gross and scary story to begin with, and kind of adding this family element to it that is really, it's so bizarre.
It is really beyond strange. And of course, Bob Weinstein also said he wants to carry on with the company, which I think the two big questions about what Bob had to say. One, do we really believe he didn't know? I keep saying, you know, I knew in the 90s, I'd heard rape allegations. So how could all these people not know? I can't say for sure, but it seems surprising to me. And the other is his intention for the company to go forward, which just seems like the company is so tainted at this point. I just don't know quite how.
Well, they found a lifeline in the short term with Colony Capital. That's Tom Barrack's company. He's a Trump friend and investor. He previously bought Miramax from Disney when Disney put that company up for sale. And he has come in with an investment and is in talks to buy some or all of the company. I don't know what form that might take, whether it would be a passive investment or even if he bought a majority stake, whether the existing management, Bob Weinstein and David Glasser, would be allowed to remain. But in the short term, it's designed to send a message that this company is not going out of business and hopefully their creative partners will not abandon them, which they've been doing over the past week.
In droves, yeah. And, you know, they do have movies in their library and TV stuff. So it's not that the company is by any means has nothing in its larder that somebody might want to raid. So we'll see what happens there. Now, of course, then Issa Hackett, the daughter of Philip K. Dick, the author who I had been talking to, trying to break a story about the alleged behavior of Roy Price at Amazon Studios. I'd been talking to her for months. Once women started coming forward in the Harvey Weinstein case, she circled back to me. She was ready to tell the story of a very unpleasant encounter with Roy Price at Comic-Con in 2015, in which he allegedly propositioned her very lewdly and aggressively. And within hours, as I said, Amazon suspended him. And, you know, Amazon has known about this behavior and other alleged behavior for 2 years at least. And I think it's not a good look for them to have waited for it to become public and then say, oops, they investigated him twice, him and his number two executive, the head of original series, Joe Louis, twice. And only when the story became public did they react.
Yeah, and you know, obviously that was an emotional and great story that you published, but the question now is whether A, Roy Price will return. I don't believe he will. And two, what does Amazon do going forward? Do they clean house there? Do they start over? You know, they've already indicated that they are going to move away from the kind of programming that Roy Price was making. They called it programming to Silver Lake, which is a reference to the setting for Transparent, very kind of niche, hipster-oriented content, and move towards what they hope will be a big, broad hit like Game of Thrones. But it seems like it's more than just a content switch. They may need to do something more substantial to that division to kind of clean it up.
Yeah, and I'll just say briefly that, as I said, Harvey was ejected from the Academy. I think a number of prominent members had threatened to resign if that didn't happen. And now that raises the question, what about Bill Cosby? What about Roman Polanski? And that's going to be a sticky wicket.
Yeah, you know, that was the fear when they did this was, you know, how far does it go? But so far, we haven't seen the Academy make any moves to do that. I think there would have to be a meeting of the board to discuss this further. I don't ultimately see them going back into the past. They can make the argument that now they've presented with the Harvey question and it's a different time and they're going to do this moving forward. But I don't think that will sit well with everyone.
We will see. I think that argument is not over. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. The new movie, The Florida Project, follows a 6-year-old girl named Mooney over the course of one summer in a gritty community just outside the gates of Disney World. Mooney, played with panache by now 7-year-old Brooklyn Prince, spends her days exploring the world around the Magic Castle, the bright purple, ironically named Ramshackle Motel, where she lives with her young mom, Haley. With no job and no prospects, Haley is a troubled woman, desperate to provide for herself and her daughter any way she can. Early in the film, Mooney makes a new friend from a neighboring motel and gives her the grand tour.
The man who lives in here gets arrested a lot.
These are the rooms we're not supposed to go in. But let's go anyway.
Sean Baker is the director of The Florida Project. You might remember that his 2015 movie Tangerine, which told the story of two transgender prostitutes, was shot entirely using the iPhone 5S. For The Florida Project, Baker did some shots on iPhones, but mostly used 35mm film.
It's very hard to actually put it into words, but I find there's an organic quality that no matter what filters you want to throw on your digital footage, you'll never achieve it. You can see when something has actually gone through the photochemical process. And to me, it has that beautiful, beautiful aesthetic that looks like a photograph. And I'm not slamming digital because I look back at Tangerine and Takeout, especially two films that I couldn't see having shot in any other way but those mediums. And I'm so happy I used those mediums.
I mean, there are people who obviously are completely major directors, 100% committed to 35mm for a reason.
And there are many other little reasons, minor, but there are other reasons. And I'm totally in agreement with Christopher Nolan that celluloid is really the only way to have assured preservation right now. There's that, and then there's also the fact that it brings a discipline to the set. And when you hear that film rolling through the gate, you can literally say you're burning money. And everybody said with Florida Project, oh, you're setting yourself up for disaster. You have kids, you have 35mm. Well, to tell you the truth, I think the 35mm helped us with the work with the children because I could literally talk to Brooklyn, Christopher, and Valeria and say, guys, you hear that sound? You hear that sound? That's money. So you guys better, you know, come on, focus. And they got disciplined as well.
You're telling this to like 6-year-old
yeah,
kids.
But they understood it and it worked.
But even with the film, you were able to tweak things. I mean, there was this scene you talked about where they go into a restaurant and there was a boom shadow and there were all these different flaws and you...
Oh, yes. Well, these days you can fix a lot in post-production. And in the past, you know, you look at some of those films made up until the digital age and you're wondering, wow, the competence of those crews to never see a dolly, to never see a boom shadow. They could never clean up the images in post like we can today. So to tell you the truth, I had to clean up a lot. But it taught me a lesson that I don't have to be as crazy about every little thing on set. I can actually do a lot of cleanup in post, and it probably is cheaper and easier to wait to post to clean it up. So instead of me freaking out and saying, cut, I've seen a boom pole, no, just let the actors get through their scene, let them finish their performance, analyze the performance and say, let's just clean it up in post if we can. You remember that, you know, they say never say fix it in post, but we're in an age where you actually can.
So speaking of crazy, apparently yeah. Your crew thought you were.
Oh, you read that article. there was one article put out there by IndieWire in which I was just being upfront about it. And to tell you the truth, it reads a little bit harsher than it actually was. What I was saying is that my sets are always chaotic. They're always crazy because I like to use sometimes documentary approach to my narrative filmmaking. It adds an element of chaos because you can't control everything. And working with a local crew and wonderful Floridian crew, but adapting to my style took a couple of days. And so, you know, there was some fear on set, but again, this is my fault. This is something that I feel as if it was a major learning lesson for me. And but it all worked out in the end. It all worked out. So
yes, it seems to have worked out.
Yes, yeah.
Of course, the casting of the kids is remarkable.
Oh, thank you.
And you got so. This little 6-year-old Brooklyn Prince.
Yes, already a Hollywood name. Brooklyn with two N's.
Brooklyn with two N's.
Yeah, that's her real name. I consider myself extremely lucky, the luckiest director on earth to have found this prodigy. I mean, she is on the same level as Jodie Foster and Mickey Rooney and just somebody who was born to do this. And I see her having a very bright future ahead. She came with experience. You know,
she's done commercials and some modeling, I read. Yeah.
You got it. And a local casting company by the name of Crowdshot found her. She came into the audition. And this was one of the things I said to my producers. I said, be prepared for us not to start on time because I honestly will not begin this production unless we find the present day Spanky McFarlane. And that was seriously, I was putting my foot down about that.
This is an allusion to
the
our
Little
gang.
Rascals, our gang. Yes. And suddenly she walks in the room and she had all the wit, the cuteness, the energy, even the puffy little cheeks of Spanky. And she won us over within seconds. And she just kept on impressing us. She kept on impressing us every day with her ability to comedically improvise if I asked her to, which is insane to ask a 6-year-old to do that. But she had that ability. She also had such heart. She's not from that area. She's from right outside of Orlando in Winter Park. But she understood what the circumstance that these families were living in, understood that she was very privileged, and she put herself in the character of Mooney, understood that Mooney was in a very difficult circumstance, and she had empathy. Even at 6 years old, you could see that she had true empathy for what the kids in the motels were going through.
Now, obviously, the parents didn't object to her working,
no.
But this is some rough material, and she had to say terrible
right.
things.
Yes.
And
of course, there's the profanity that we had to deal with. That was the number one issue because everything else she was sheltered from. The adult themes in the film, there were ways of shooting that scene in which those scenes in which she was never aware of truly what was going on. I mean, we focus on sex work in the film. You know, obviously the adults are going through many hardships. There's the underground economy. So there's probably drug dealing going on within this community, violence. But all of those things were sort of, they're seen to a certain degree in the movie, but the kids never had to understand what was happening, meaning the little actors never had to understand. They were smart enough, though, to understand that someday they'll understand. That was the cool thing. She goes, someday I'll enjoy this movie and I'll understand it completely. But
she's watched it, I assume?
She has watched it. But again, I think there are things that go over the heads of kids. But of course, the profanity was something we had to address before we began shooting. When we decided on the three children, we were in the back room of the acting studio that I mentioned, Crowdshot, down in Orlando. And we asked the parents to come into the back room. And I said to the parents, We love your children. They're amazing. It would be an honor if you'd allow us to cast them in our film, but you have to know something up front. They will not only hear profanity, but they will have to utter profanity. And so we're going to have to figure out how to do this in the most appropriate way and something that protects the children. And my wonderful acting coach, Samantha Kwan, who worked with the kids, you know, worked with the parents, and basically, the parents advised them, and we figured out a way of just saying to the kids, look, these are words that are only to be used in character while between my action and my cut, and they're not to be used in the real world. There is going to be respect on set, and these are not words to be used in real life. And they got it. And so that's really how we went about doing that.
And yet, you know, and she's completely without self-consciousness when she says those words, or all the kids do. You don't see them looking like they're, you know, that naughty, we're saying the naughty word look very much.
Oh, no. They were always, I mentioned Samantha Kwan just before. She was the acting coach on the film, and she really spent time with these kids. I mean, we turned the summer into a summer camp, basically, for them. While I was off shooting something with Willem Dafoe, they were in that Magic Castle room that we had rented out, where they could actually have exercises, workshops. We made it fun for them. They took time to understand their characters so that, and of course, they had to memorize all of their written lines. I mean, that was very important. I learned the hard way. I wasn't just able to have them riff on set. They had to learn all of our written lines. Then I was able to say on set, you're allowed to go off page a little bit if you want to, if you are so inspired to put it into your own words or to add a joke or two, that's fine with me. Brooklyn actually was very gifted at this, and we did it a lot with her. Remember the scene where it's in the trailer, where the ice cream drips on the floor? And there's that back and forth between the two kids eating the ice cream and Bobby, played by Willem. They're sort of taunting him, and he's just waiting for that drip, and then he's going to kick him out of the lobby. Okay. That scene, it was shot just as it was scripted, word for word. Up until the very end, Willem goes, "Thank you very much." And Brooklyn goes, "You're not welcome."
Okay. I warned you, one drip and you're out.
Oh, come on.
Out now.
It's going to melt.
It's melting inside, too.
But, Bobby.
Out. Thank you very much.
You're not welcome.
So, basically, those last two lines were improvised. That's Brooklyn. That's her improvising in character, and it just enhances that scene.
Coming up after a short break, director Sean Baker tells us about casting the Florida Project with people he found on Instagram and shopping at Target. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to Sean Baker, director and co-writer of the new film, The Florida Project. Much of the movie is set in an Orlando-area motel called the Magic Castle, a place built years ago to accommodate Disney World visitors. It gradually transformed into seedy, long-term lodging for down-on-their-luck residents. Willem Dafoe, the only established actor in the film, plays Bobby, the motel manager. He's trying his best to run a tight ship and keep an eye on the mischievous kids who run amok at the motel. Among them are Mooney, played by Brooklyn Prince, and her friends Scooty and Jancy, played by Christopher Rivera and Valeria Cotto. At one point, Bobby stops by the room where Mooney lives with her mom, Haley, played by Bria Venaita, to try to impose some order.
It's only second week of the summer and there's already been a dead fish in the pool.
We were doing an experiment. We were trying to get it back alive. That was my idea.
And water balloons thrown at tourists? You can't f*** with tourists.
They didn't tip us.
Are you serious?
No.
Oh my God, this is unacceptable. I failed as a mother, Mooney. You disgraced me.
Harley.
Yeah, Mom, you're disgraced.
The Florida Project director, Sean Baker, is known for his work with first-time actors, and initially was hesitant about putting Willem Dafoe into the mix. You were concerned that when people saw that face of a famous person, they would be taken out of this world.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm concerned with that with every film. But then, of course, there's a responsibility to deliver to your financiers something that's actually marketable and will hopefully make its money back. Audiences, you just know this, it's a given. They expect to see somebody they recognize on the screen. It helps sell tickets. It's very hard to have good box office with a completely unknown cast. But I really do like mixing it up. And but to get to Willem, we were hoping to cast Bobby with, you know, somebody, a Hollywood name. And when Willem's name came across the table, I was taken aback because, you know, he's such, in my eyes, I consider him such a classic actor and seasoned actor. And so the fact that he was even considering this, I was honored. But then I heard that he had seen Tangerine and he was looking to try my style or experiment or whatever. He lives in Rome most of the year, but he had like a 24-hour window in New York. I red-eyed it to New York and I sat down and I had coffee with him and I just explained the whole thing and we really connected instantaneously. And I saw that he was willing to put in the work. He wanted to blend in. So he wanted to take the time to understand the world down there, the politics, and meet with some of the motel managers that actually helped inspire his character, which is great. So he came in almost a week early from when we needed him and just absorbed. And it was really nice to see that from somebody who really didn't have to do that. You know, but mm-hmm. as an artist, he wanted to do it. And it was really great.
You did have one of the kids lives in one of the hotels that are the setting for the...
Christopher Rivera was actually living at one of the motels when we cast him. He's no longer there, but he was when we cast him. And I didn't actually even know about that until after his first audition. We were looking for kids from all different backgrounds. It didn't matter if they had experience or not, it was about their personas and their talent. And Christopher Rivera is wonderful as little Scooty. So yes.
And did I read that you accosted some mom in a supermarket or something?
Oh my God.
Stalker.
You see, this is what I mean by like articles getting out of control. No, basically I saw little Valeria Cotto, who plays Jancy in the film, walking through Target with her mom, and she had that striking red hair. And I went up to her mother, Eve, and I said, here's my business card. You know, please have your daughter come in and audition for the role. And I guess that night she had Googled me and she saw I was legit. I must have been a little strange because my business cards have my chihuahuas on them. So it's like, who is this guy?
Man with small dogs?
Yeah, in the middle of Kissimmee. Yeah, no, it doesn't look good. But anyway, so she Googled me. Everything is legit. She brings in Valeria. Valeria wins us over in the audition. She's great. Then we find out she's 5 years old and 2 months away from six, but we're shooting within those 2 months. So child labor laws, there's a difference between being 5 and 6. It cuts off 2 more hours from the day. And so my producers were like, do you have to? And I go, yeah, she's that good. Sorry. So we had to shuffle our whole schedule around to accommodate for Valeria, but she was worth it. And, you know, she's also impossible to get a body double for because of that red hair. So
right.
We couldn't even rely on body doubles for her.
So Bria Venaita,
yeah.
You found on Instagram.
Yes.
Where you were just running through Instagram saying, I need a heavily tatted up person who looks like she could be a kind of a raunchy mom in
no,
a hotel.
No, actually, I wasn't trying to cast through Instagram. I was using Instagram as a way of looking for types, in a way saying, this is what Haley might look like. We were actually considering casting that role conventionally, the Hollywood route. And we were thinking all of the A-listers that you can think of, 20 to 24-year-old, big in Hollywood right now. Yes, all those names were being discussed. But I came across Bria's Instagram page by accident. I think somebody had reposted hers, and I was just in one of those black holes at night in my bed, just scrolling. And suddenly I came across her page, and she made me laugh. And she had these little videos that were only like approximately 6 seconds long, but she was self-deprecating, she was witty, she was youthful, she was energetic, and she was also already putting herself out there, so I knew there wouldn't be a confidence problem. And I just kept going back saying, you know, for this character and the struggles that the character of Haley is going through, if the audience is constantly seeing somebody they recognize in this role, I don't think they'll ever buy into it. And for this role, we should probably go with a first timer. Why don't we just try her out? So, you know, sent a direct message to her. She, again, like my business cards, my Instagram is just my chihuahuas.
We gotta get these chihuahuas on the show, yeah?
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, there's just pictures of my dog. So obviously she just thought it was one of her, she probably has a lot of stalkers. She has, yeah, she's an Instagram personality and she just thought I was one of many stalkers or something. But she Googled me. She saw it was legit. I said, come down to Orlando, read with the two little kids that I already cast. And she said, okay, I'll do it. And she came down, she read with the kids. Within minutes, Brooklyn was sitting on her lap and they were singing top 40 songs together, and I just knew it was going to work. And then it was about getting her ready because she was green, she was aware of it, she was enthused to do this, but at the same time, she needed some handholding, and we knew that we had to give her basically like a crash course in acting in the month leading up to shooting. And Samantha Kwan, who worked with the kids, worked with her as well and just worked her and got her to the point where she was understanding her character enough where, again, if I asked her to improvise, she understood what Haley was going through, where she could improvise on it and hold her own with Willem within 2 weeks. It was incredible to see her work.
Amazing.
I was very,
very
lucky.
Natural.
Very, very lucky. Again, that could have gone drastically
really wrong.
That could have really have gone wrong.
You say, Willem, you're going to act with this person, Instagram person. Did he go, what are you talking about? Or like, I'm in, I'll do that.
Oh, he was fine. He was great. No, if anybody, he was the one who was willing to experiment and have fun. I think it's because of my previous films, I have been very lucky where I've found first timers and they've worked. So I had a good track record. And I think that that's what allowed me to do this because it was a major gamble, especially at this budget range. The other films were easier because they were a couple hundred thousand, if that. This was, you know, in the millions.
Did the financing of this film arise from the success of Tangerine?
Yeah, I think so. Yes. June Pictures, Andrew Duncan and Alex Sachs at June Pictures, they stepped right up and they said, you can get final cut on whatever you make for around
like,
this
damn,
budget.
I'm a final cut director.
And I said, definitely.
Did studios come after you after Tangerine? They must have. They always do. They try to ruin people.
No, but I might, also might be, my short-term memory has been loss has been
you
kicking
forgot
in.
When Warner Brothers
but
called.
I got a lot of television offers, and I yes, there were a few offers, but I don't think anything that big. And I like actually telling stories that I am a writer of. So yeah.
So did you shop all over? Did you how did you figure out who was going to pay for this thing?
No, to tell you the truth, there wasn't really. June was one of the first that came around, and again gave me the budget that we needed for this. And also I knew that Alex Sachs really had, she's a cinephile herself. I knew her from her ICM days. So I just knew that she would support me in terms of my vision. So I didn't really have to do that whole like begging around town, which I did before, you know, before Tangerine. Yes, we pitched Florida Project all over and got turned down.
Predated.
Yes.
And then you ended up doing Tangerine instead.
Yes, and I'm really happy it didn't happen at that time, even though in 2012, right after Starlet, which was the film I made before Tangerine, we were kicking ourselves. Like Chris and I were just really, Chris Bergosh and I, my co-screenwriter.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we were really upset at the time. But then in hindsight, it all worked out because
Brooklyn.
Well, Brooklyn, that's the number one thing. Brooklyn was one.
The perfect person to play the role. Yeah.
You got it. Yeah. And plus on top of that, I really do feel that there was a style of Tangerine that we continued into this film. So Tangerine in a way dictated our approach to story, meaning the use of comedy more overtly. And I really don't think that that would have happened pre-Tangerine. It would have been probably a darker film. So I'm very, very happy we actually waited and took the time to figure out the proper approach to it.
Sean Baker is the director and editor and co-writer of The Florida Project. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, and I'm a big fan of this show.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can subscribe to The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts at kcrw.com/podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business. Stay tuned. The world is coming up next.